This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
My real passion is helping organizations be successful by leveraging the value of design and meeting tangible business objectives and shifting that culture to one of a humanistic approach. And I've been very fortunate to be able to collaborate with some of our great panelists here today. This event is the start of this journey. It's how we can make design visible in San Diego, how we can connect and bring us all together to make our city into a true innovation design city. Designing strategies to be more competitive and responsive to consumer expectations is the hallmark of successful companies, and the results are in. Design is elevating brand equity. Design is increasing the adoption curve, as Larry mentioned this morning. And it's really improving the outcomes by designing more human experiences, as we saw in the video from GE Healthcare. The conversation is changing, and design has moved from a profession from a nice to have to a need to have. So it's time we get on board. Our esteemed panel of experts whom we have brought together today are creating visible change on a global scale. And we're pretty excited to hear what they're going to be talking about. Each will give a short presentation on how they're transforming cities and countries through different business models. Victor Nassif We'll talk about how the UK Design Council, a leader in research and documentation of design's value since 1944, has actually shifted to not just looking at the value of design as a profession, but looking at the value of the whole entire UK economy. Peter Haythornthwaite, co-creator of the Better by Design and Design to Business initiatives, both government-sponsored programs, will share how they successfully are bedding design into industry and businesses in New Zealand and Australia. Elena Pacenti will present how Europe's design heritage is creating a true competitive advantage. Unfortunately, our first speaker from City of Mexico, Gabriela Gomez Mont, caught the flu and can no longer join us today. But she actually successfully, single-handedly got the mayor of Mexico City to focus design and started this laboratory. And we'll hear and truly be inspired by Brenda, who will be showing how Mexico City is now on the map. And we have to catch up to them. Our goal today is to learn from these models and to inspire a conversation to take action on what we can do together to make San Diego a true innovation designed city. I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Victor Nassif, who brings a broad global perspective to our conversation today, having lived in 8 countries with a multicultural background of American, Mexican, Arabic, and Lebanese. Incredible, Victor. A true lover of cars and mobility, Victor worked 11 years at Nissan in the U.S. as VP of Business Aspects Design, and also design in London, Nissan Design in London, as the global head of product communications for all of Nissan. He worked 10 years at Peugeot Citroën and 16 years at Ford as a designer and a design manager. The perfect question that you can ask Victor is, what car does he drive? So I'm not going to spoil it for you, but that will be a great conversation starter. Victor has taught at Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, Royal College of Art in London, and has executive education from Stanford and HEC in Paris. He's currently chief creative officer for one of the top 20 innovative companies, Brojure, which is developed by Penny Wing, his partner. I guarantee Victor's short talk will inspire you as he presents an overview of where cities are in their design journey and how design can impact the results particularly with the transformation of London and what the work of the UK Design Council has pioneered in measuring design. Yes, design really can be measured, believe it or not. Victor?
Thank you, Joan. Good morning, everyone. Thank you. So really starting it off, and I started analyzing how a city is created. When somebody in government starts to create a city from nothing, what do they start with? And they really start with the most basic elements, which is how do you start introducing manufacturing? How do you bring people into a city? How do you create an industry by bringing people in, but also giving them work, giving them the ability to make money, and allowing that city to start thriving? And we start really in kind of a backwards way because it's the quickest hit. And you start off by manufacturing. So the most important thing when you're starting a city is you start manufacturing. And soon afterwards, you start realizing, what is it that you need? Well, you need engineering to do the manufacturing. And from there, you start getting into cities that become more and more mature. And the maturity of a lot of the cities in the United States and probably throughout the world is now based a lot on technology and innovation. Those areas are important because that's the area that we're in now. The technology and the innovation starts fueling the engineering, which fuels, again, manufacturing. And this is how you start creating a city economy. In actuality, there's one step after that, and that is design. That's inspiration, the ability to inspire a culture, to inspire a city, and to inspire a people to start working well together and start introducing something that is beyond just the manufacturing of products. That's really important. You'll see very clearly that a lot of what we're doing is, in the past, has been looking at formulas that work in other cities, and we say, okay, well, all we have to do is repeat it. That's a possibility, but that doesn't lead us into the leadership role that we should be having. The most important thing is to start looking at new opportunities in a new way of thinking. That's important because the culture has changed, the mindsets have changed, the expectations of people and citizens have changed. And so we have to find new ways of inventing new things. An example of that, and I lived, altogether I've lived about 10 years in London, and I was very fortunate because I came at separate times. I came in the early 80s, early 90s, late 80s to early 90s, and then again in 2010. And what was interesting is the city of London really didn't change a lot from 1900 till about 2000. And then suddenly there was this incredible explosion that happened in the city. And part of that was just this very strong commitment to make London the leading edge city in design. And they really started incorporating that in a very strong way. So you see London in 1900, 2016, and now look where in 2015 where London will be. Already, the tallest building in Europe is called the Shard. Already there are 213 projects throughout London. And out of those, there are going to be about 50 that will be taller than the Shard. Now, how are they going to manage that? How are they going to make the city evolve, and how are they going to manage all of the complexities that come with all of the new building that they're doing? So part of my research was really into the design economy. And if we look at this, this actually comes from a group that I really respect, and I'll talk about it later on in the question and answer period, is the Design Council. They actually are very, very hands-on, very participative, and they helped to identify what are the opportunities that businesses and government can use, what are the metrics that we can use that are very important. So the design economy, just to be clear, is more than just saying, well, let's get a group of designers and let's put them in a city and then see what happens. It's actually a very strong, concerted effort that talks about many, many aspects of design. And I think most of you have touched on either one or multiple aspects. What that does is that gives a lot of breadth and depth to the business of design. And that's extremely important because what you want is you want it to go into the fiber of the city. You want it to not just be added on, but to actually be inclusive and grow from within. And if you see design, I think pretty much all of you have, again, been a part of that in one aspect or another. Now, the design economy is broken up into two parts, and they identify that, and that's purely the design economy is purely the designers that you're talking about, the designers in all aspects of it. But it also feeds into a creative economy. And more businesses, more and more products are getting involved in the creative economy because that's what gives them a unique leverage and a unique advantage into what's being done. The design economy has set over 72,000 design firms in London. And really, it's been blossoming. I showed up in 2010, and it was not because of me that the market has increased 51%, but it was because there were so many things happening around that time. There's over 1.5 million people that have been employed in this design economy. That's pretty substantial in a city like London that is probably around 6 million, 6.5 million people. And you're dealing with this obviously throughout the UK, but you can see a majority of people are based in London. You're probably dealing with about 1 million of them based in London. And the employment is, if you can imagine, working and living in London is actually extremely good right now. Now, the bottom line is, and this is the beauty of the metrics that were designed, that were done by the Design Council, is there's numbers. There's factual data that exists. And that factual data states basically there's 71.5, 71, 72. This was from 2013, by the way, so it's probably more now. Billion pounds. So it's well over $100 billion that goes into the economy. And you can see the numbers that are there. Another element that changes is not only the productivity, because we talk about productivity as we say, okay, as companies, we become more productive, we become stronger at what we're doing. But in actuality, the productivity also comes from the attitude of the people that are working. If you're working in an exciting environment, you're creating exciting products, you actually improve in every single way. An example of living there in the five and a half years that I did this time, there were many things that the government did in relationship to working with creatives. And they have a lot of events that every year are breaking records. And they're breaking records because more and more people are becoming sensitized to the importance of design. They have Design Week. I think most of you might have heard some of these, London Design Festival, et cetera, et cetera. The last one that I'd like to talk to you very briefly about is that sporting events. Literally, the Olympics started it off, but literally every sporting event that London is doing now encompasses aspects of design in a very strong way and in a very overt way. And that's really important because it, again, sensitizes the whole citizenship into the economy. So what's London doing to not just be a player in the game of design, but to be a leader in the game of design by 2050? They're touching every single aspect in here. And a lot of these are very complex subjects that require very creative thinking. We will also, here in San Diego, be faced with some of these. We are faced with them already, but we will be faced probably in a more intensive level. And then, how do we start using San Diego as a think tank, but also as a do tank for design? How do we actually start changing the fiber of the city? Not just the surface, but the depth of the city. And I think that we're heading in the right direction. Actually, after leaving 5.5 years and coming back here in June of last year, literally a year ago, I must tell you that I'm very, very impressed with what San Diego has done between 2010 and 2015. And I think that we have that opportunity, if I can say, to dream, to be the leaders. No one owns design. No one in the United States, no city owns design. So this allows San Diego to take a very strategic and very strong advantage into what we're doing. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. It's really, truly inspiring to see how London has pulled together as a city to embrace the many aspects of design. and to really see how the UK has become a leader in measuring its value and driving economic growth. And I think we have a lot we can learn from that and be inspired by that. I consider ourselves lucky to have our next speaker, Elena Pacenti, here in San Diego. Her rich European heritage and spirit drives her to continuously push the boundaries on how design can be embedded into our culture. Elena is from Milan, where she was director of research center and the design school at one of the top design schools globally, the Domus Academy. She has brought this expertise to San Diego to create leading programs for the Domus Academy here under the direction of, for the new School of Architecture, the president of Malika, Marvin Malika. One way you can really...
It's good.
Good, good. Thank you. We have a kind of secret for in the designers as a code, and I don't know if you've all discovered this or not, but we like to dress in black, and black or white, or perhaps a pop of color. And so we know Elena is a true designer because you will only see her in black. Another small thing about Elena is that she doesn't like garlic. Being Italian, I don't know. We'll have to see if that's true. Helen is presenting an overview of European design-driven economies and how design has become a culture that's embedded to really make a competitive advantage. And so we're excited to see how we can understand what's happening in Europe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Helen.
So, thank you. Thank you, John. I'm not only just always dressing black, I'm exactly wearing what I have in the picture, so you don't get wrong. I have other clothes in there. So I want to start this little speech on my personal journey. So as John said, I actually established the Domus Academy School of Design, a new school of architecture and design in San Diego. So almost 3 years ago, I moved to San Diego and we started this adventure. And so far, so good. I want to still thank you, my students and instructors who worked in making the venue of the conference over there more design-like and participating in this challenge too. So I want to start from Italy. Okay, I want to just say a few words about Italy because we do have a strong design culture that is recognized worldwide. But it's really a design culture that is very associated to very traditional fields such as furniture, cars, luxury goods, very well done, made goods, and fashion. And everybody knows about design objects that are made in Italy. And most of us probably know about those companies that have been innovators in their years, like Brion Vega, like Fiat for cars, like Olivetti, a kind of Apple ante litteram, if you allow me to say, because the real nature, even if we know about and we associate Italian design with these kinds of objects. By the way, they are all red by chance, but that maybe means passion, or the kind of Italian passion. But if we are famous for these, actually what did allow the success of Made in Italy has been, first of all, the dialogue between the entrepreneurs and the designers to strategically position the companies and the products and think about different products on the market. And thanks to the network of stakeholders that has been the thing that has grown the design culture in Italy. And when I say stakeholders, you see some numbers here, but it's clear that it's just through the interaction of different kinds of stakeholders that design becomes a culture. You need education, you need cultural, you need the museums, you need the business, and you need magazines, you need everything together. So, and this is what happened in Milan. Milan is still somehow the capital of Italian design in Europe, one of, just because of all these actors, stakeholders working together. So Triennale, the Design Museum, the magazines, of course, Domus and my mom, but also Intendez. There's more than 60 editors in Italy doing more than 200 magazines. And of course, the trade show. So the Salone del Mobile in Milan is still one of the biggest events about design related to furniture, lighting, and all connected goods that still brings more than 370,000 visitors a year. Consider it is almost twice or more than twice the Comic-Con in San Diego, okay? And around that is just, it's huge, it's a city. It's probably three or four times the convention center here that just connect all the products from Italy, from all over the world, with the number of visitors from abroad that is 70% almost people visiting from abroad. But around the furniture fair, it started the design week. So the design week is not just about products. Design week is about design and innovation. The city, for 6 days, becomes a museum open air, where all kinds of industries go and show their new thing, their new innovation. So it's over almost 1,200 events in a week. It's crazy. But that's still an attraction that still brings lot of money and helps the economy of Milan, in this case, in a moment in which the economy struggles. But it's really Europe that made the difference and probably took seriously design on a systemic level as a way to innovate and to promote the economic growth. And so I'm going to bring you through some of the main acts of European Union, the Commission of the European Union, we call it, and some of the policies that allowed us to Europe to take a leadership and a leadership position in design. First of all, design as a driver of user-centered innovation. This is the first act that the European Union took seriously, and that states that a more systematic use of design would improve the European competitiveness. This is very important. European Union means the policies for research and incentives and money for all the countries in Europe. And they have called user-centered innovation by design. So a series of actions that, and this is the document that is still from the Commission, that is called the Implementing an Action Plan for Design-Driven Innovation, that allowed to start a series of initiatives and policies in all the different countries. Finland has been one of the first who actually started to take design seriously and to input design into the way of improving the business, especially starting from the long recession period they had in the 90s. And then, you know, they have a tradition of design started by Alvar Aalto and similar thing that is very strong. And they did a great work on a medium, long-term base to actually implementing measures to help the companies research and development and based on design and exports. So their economy has been really based on design, still very based on traditional design, the design if you want, but with lot of power. Denmark followed with good design in 2007, and the Danish Design Center is still one of the places where we go to take inspiration on what and how to inspire and promote design into business and for the competitiveness of the country. But it's UK that actually made the difference. And again, I want to go back to the Design Council that for most of you is probably very famous for the double diagram that everybody knows. But it's really, Design Council did a great job. And UK has been the country where the user-driven design or the user-centered design started seriously. They have implemented user-centered actions in all the sectors, but most of all on the public sector. UK has been strong in introducing design on a systematically and very consistently, not only for the business, not only for the traditional sectors, but for the public sector. Strong movement that brings us to a wider definition and scope of design that is shared among all the countries, but they made an impact on this. So good design, taken from the Good Design Plan, good design is sustainable design. It results in objects, systems, or services that work aesthetically, functionally, and commercially, improving people's lives and making the smallest possible impact on the planet. As you can see, the scope is not only design for business. Here is design for better living. No doubt that this is an important statement for everybody. So a lot of actions. I have seen with my eyes a lot of consistent and pervasive actions on how design improved the public sector and the satisfaction of citizens to, you know, use the services every day. UK has been the place where service design that was theorized, or we were pioneering in other countries in Europe, myself included, did take seriously, and design, service design started from a group of design firms, and the public sector really did a lot of experiments and improvement in that sense. And I want to go back to the design economy document just to give you one small data, and that's about the industrial design. So what industry sectors do UK design businesses work for? If you notice, manufacturing is just the 24%. Most of the designers work for the public sector, for financial, for other kinds of industries. That gives us a picture that design is not just about products. Design is about something that has a wider scope. And so, in conclusion, I want to go back to the Design for Growth and Prosperity document from the European Union, saying that, yes, design can help being competitive, and it's strategically proven that the companies that invest in design are more profitable and they grow faster. So what's the value of design-driven innovation? For sure, the business value. And we will have more example and in-depth example on what are the economic indicators that allows us to measure the business value of design. But to me, the most important part is not just to demonstrate that design can have an impact on the business. I think that one of the most important things is that the good design actually help living better. So help. And not only is not a cost, is a value that can be measured economically, socially, and environmentally. And again, back to the Design Council. And if you look at the Creative Economy report from UNESCO, 2013, they have developed some indicators that not only, again, measure the business value or the economic value, but also the social, cultural, and environmental value of design. So that's my wish for San Diego, and I close here, is to really take the advantage of the experiences we had in Europe, take the advantage of the talents and the different realities that San Diego is able to attract in this beautiful place, to really leverage and go farther, go a step ahead, and try to build up a culture if we can. And a culture that is based on using design not only for, you know, making a difference in the world in terms of business and industry innovation, but also for leveraging the fact that we have a sense of quality of life here, we have a sense of a lifestyle that is wonderful and can be an example and a lab for design-driven innovation that brings social and environmental and cultural innovation. Thank you.
Thank you, Elena. Two words I really love from that presentation, consistent and purposeful. And I think that is what we really need behind a program. And also that the DNA of what we have here in San Diego, getting together all the stakeholders. We're a very collaborative community, and I think we have that DNA and can make that work. So thank you. We have a lot to learn from the European and what's going on in Milan. Our next speaker, Brenda Veritas, is a globally trained industrial designer with a master's in creative sustainability from Aalto University in Helsinki. She currently works under Gabriela Gomez-Mont at the Lab for the City of Mexico. And her passion is to foster beneficial social impact for society and the environment through design, and by doing that hands-on in the field. A fun fact is that she was a synchronized swimmer, and she loves the band The Talking Heads. I won't steal her thunder on how they did it, but it is happening in Mexico City. Mexico City is going to be the world design capital in 2018. My gosh, we have to catch up. Thank you, Brenda.
Well, I'm going to begin my presentation with a video.
Well, again, hello. I'm Brenda Vertis from the Laboratorio para la Ciudad. And that was the amazing Mexico City. and where I born and live now, and I say now because I moved back from Helsinki, actually, and last year. And in some way, Mexico City, while I was there the last year, was calling me back. It was, I kept thinking, like, all the time that the city was there and then that I wanted to do something that, I don't know, something different, because my thought was that in such a complex and extreme system, I think you can also can extremely learn and develop like a really complex and extreme learning. So when I thought about that, I decided to go. I just put my winter coat in the closet and then I went back to Mexico City. There was one only place where I wanted to work because, as you know, in Finland, design kind of permeates like many areas. It's in the government, it's in the schools, of course, it's in the industry, it's in the everywhere. So I wanted to do that, but in Mexico City. And the only organization that kind of allowed me, or that I thought that would allow me to do that, was the Laboratorio para la Ciudad. So the Laboratorio para la Ciudad is part of an organization, of a group of organizations that have a direct connection with the public sector. And it was created to challenge complex public issues that the traditional government structures want to solve. The Laboratorio para la Ciudad is a very, very small lab for a really big city. It's the first one in a megalopolis, and it's the first one in the emergent world. The Laboratorio para la Ciudad, it focuses on civic innovation and urban creativity. That's the space where we work. It's a place in a public office, but it's, as you see, it's a kind of like a really different place. So you can do, or you are allowed, even by the look of it, to do different stuff there. What we do is basically experiment with the city. We want to make Mexico City a better city, and we just do that. We experiment, we go out, we talk with people, we do a lot of field work, and then we try to come up with solutions to solve some of the city's problems. The first experiment, I'm sorry it's in Spanish, but it's the same, experimento. The first experiment, of course, was the team. We are a really multidisciplinary team. At the lab, well, there are historians, journalists, geographers, designers, architects, what else? Lawyers, let me see, filmmakers, of course, photographers. And so it makes us kind of like a really interesting group with very different views about how to approach problems in the city. So how does the lab approaches design and innovation? Well, we use design in the lab as a method for creating something that doesn't exist before, or that did not exist before, sorry, but better, of course. And our innovation mission is not to create something new, like just a tiny part, but instead think about the whole system, let's say the city, in a whole new way. We think about design in a strategic way, in a systemic way, about design as a knowledge-making method and as a social method. Systemic. Well, for us, systemic design is about understanding the opportunities and the challenges of a system and try to change it in order for the system to change its behavior. So I'm going to show you an example of, let's say, systemic design. It's called Mapatón. And Mapatón was, let's say, we created an app that allowed the riders of the Peseros, that it's the public transport in Mexico City, to share GPS data to map the routes of all the public transport. Because before that, before we did it, there wasn't any any routes. It's not like in Europe or in the US. We don't. If you are in Mexico City and if you take a bus, you don't know where the bus is going to take you. So there wasn't anything like that, and so we decided to do that, and we do it. We made an open call, and we just wanted people to, by let's say, designing a game to share these GPS data, and then try to map the routes of the buses. And we give the teams a really like a big prize. I don't remember the exact amount of money, but I think it was maybe like $10,000. Yeah, something like that. And so you can see there that during 400 days, with more than 4,000 participants, we mapped 1,000 routes in 250 hours. And that's kind of like if we were traveling around the Earth 1.4 times. Another example of design in the lab and the strategic design. Strategic design for us is about shaping decision making. So now Mexico City is Mexico City, but it used to be this federal district. So now we are going to have a constitution. So for that, the laboratorio is acting like the connection, like the direct connection between the citizens of Mexico City and the government. And we are designing a platform, a participatory platform, where citizens in Mexico City can express their desires, concerns about the city, and we want to make those concerns, desires, and needs, we want to put them in the new constitution. We are working with a really young team of people, and we are developing different programs, platforms, and events, and we gather all the people in Mexico City to work on this design of the new constitution. Design as a knowledge-creating method. We also, at the lab, see design as a tool for framing the conversation. Design in Mexico is not as in Europe. People still think that designers are the only ones, or are people that only design like objects or cars or something like that, like tangible things. But now we at the laboratorio, we are kind of starting to frame the conversation, and we want to show in Mexico City the impact of design and the creative industries. The designers are important to generate design knowledge and to develop and contribute to the cultures of creativity. We have developed a program and a series of events where people can go and learn about design and learn about some tools for develop their own design career. In terms of social design, and this is like a very special project for me because I'm the one that it's kind of like leading it. Social design for us in the laboratorio, it's about directing all the peoples in the city energy towards a social change and a specific change, which is quite hard since we are 20 million people there. But in Mexico, the traffic incidents are the first cause of death among children between 5 and 9 years. And the amazing thing is that 90% of those traffic incidents can be prevented. So what are we doing about it at the laboratorio? Where we are taking the streets and we are fighting for the kids' rights to the city and to play. We are tackling the lack of public and open spaces in Mexico City. There's a picture of one event that we had. We closed the street with the help of Peatonito, which is the masked wrestler that fights for the pedestrian rights. And we developed with kids some activities, and we took a street, and we were just playing there. And that's Peatonito with all the kids. And that's it. Those are some of the examples of just few of the projects we are working with the laboratorio. And Mexico City will be the World Design Capital in 2018. And the most important part for us is that collective action moves Mexico City. So the question is how we could direct all this energy to imagine and design ourselves first, different, and a better future. And I think that's it.
Thank you. Thanks. Very nice job. Thank you, Brenda. It's really that lab's think tank approach, which brings together systems thinking. And that's what really design is all about, bringing together those different disciplines and that creative ethos and the perspective of moving from services to possibilities. That's really shaking up the government down there. My partner Chuck Pelley and I have known our next speaker, Peter Haythornthwaite, for many years as he began his career at the Henry Dreyfuss office in New York. And he's a real iconic designer in the world of design. He worked at DesignWorks, Chuck's company, and which was eventually purchased by BMW. As this slide shows, Peter thinks out of the box. I just love it. Turns things upside down. He's one of the rare individuals that has impacted the transformation of governments, individuals, and many, many, many companies through design. He has been an entrepreneur, starting many successful businesses, including a consumer products company, Artifacts, which exported products globally. And he had his own design consultancy in New Zealand, Peter Haythornthwaite Design, which he sold to his employees. Since then, he has been co-founder of Equip Design Integration Program for Better by Design and Design to Business in New Zealand. And you'll hear today these two business models that he co-created that have really made an impact in these two countries. One of the nice things that just happened, Peter was named in the Queen's 90th birthday honors as an officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit. Congratulations, Peter. That's a real honor.
Thank you. Well, hello. The photograph actually is me upside down, so to speak, because I live down under, as you people refer to us. And I must say it was absolutely delightful to see a map that included New Zealand up there, because so often we get dropped off the bottom. So we are a long way away. So what I want to share with you is the two programs that have been set up in Australia and New Zealand, both of government run, the design integration programs. The first one is Better by Design in New Zealand. The second is Design to Business in Victoria, Australia. So the fundamental premise around which these programs were formed and the way they're running is that when design culture is embedded in business culture, transformations are created that lead to real prosperity and business growth. Better by Design started in 2004 and is very active, currently active, and will continue to be active. It started as a result of some very difficult times for New Zealand. In 2087, New Zealand had a major stock market crash. And after that, over an eight-year period, New Zealand grew only by about 3 or 4%, whereas the OECD countries grew by 30%. So it was a very difficult time. We were very centred on commodity exports. We are still a commodity export country by and large, and we're a long way from our market. But fortunately, what was observed by the government is that there are a number of companies that were doing extremely well, and they were small design-based companies. So in 2003, a task force was put together. It included the Deputy Prime Minister, so it was considered very important. And they produced a document called Success by Design. And these are a number of the points that came through. One is that we wanted to create highly visible design-based companies that would create pull for design. We wanted to focus on SMEs, small to medium enterprises, not big corporate, but small to medium enterprises. Why? Because they're owner-run, they're flexible, and open to change. The general idea was that innovation and design together create competitive advantage and creative strengths. Instead of being run and delivered by the government, it was set up to run as a hybrid between government and business. The guidance for it was from business people, independent, and Treasury were to fund it by $12.5 million over a three-year period. We had an absolutely audacious goal. In 5 years, 50 companies would grow at five times the gross domestic product and add an additional $500 million to the economy. This was achieved. So what was intended with the program is we wanted to inform SMEs about design, what advantages it was going to bring to them. So we did that through CEO summits, through design study visits, primarily to Silicon Valley and New York, and through peer company visits, where peer companies visited each other and saw what how each one was utilizing and employing and growing by design. And we set out to enable SMEs through an audit process of exposing their design capability gap, of revealing the real opportunities that were there for them, and to embed design capacity within the organizations and guide them on the journey. So what did we need? We needed smart, growth-orientated, export-focused companies in the $5 to $100 million category from a group of different industries. But the key thing was they were open to embed design culture in business culture. Also, when we talk about design culture, we talk about prescience, differentiation, innovation, rigor, consistency, long-term thinking, and user-centricity, or people-centricity. So the program's been running for a considerable period of time. It started off as an audit. It is now a coaching program. Has it been successful? This is one exceptional statement, I think, from this company that it has actually grown from $3 million to $200 million in 8 years. That's not just by design, but it's also by acquisition. But basically, they changed their pathway and they realized that they had to have brand and product as co-joint twins working together in harmony. And that together, they would cube the value of the business. The second program is Design to Business Australia. It started on a fairly similar basis to the New Zealand program. It had a very difficult economy at the time. The economy was growing, but it was growing based on commodities, crops and rocks, as we would say, and also a real estate boom, which was really quite artificial. It was fueled by tax incentives and borrowings. So the purpose was 40 graduate companies who are successful. We wanted to run those through the program. The focus was on smaller companies, but there were still SMEs in the $5 to $50 million category. The idea, like the New Zealand program, was innovation plus design capability creates competitive advantage. Delivery by business, a smaller funding. So there's two programs that have been running in parallel. Integration, which is a deep one-year collaborative engagement. We'll run 47 companies through the program, but only 40 graduates. A collaborative diagnostic audit and plan is the underpinning basis, but there's a whole series of other components that support that. Securing the right candidates. What we do know is that once you've got companies on board and they start to see success by design, you have participant business owners going out and talking to their friends who may be business owners and telling them about, in inverted commas, the good news. Also, convinced designers, in other words, they're not threatened by the audit program, going out and telling their clients that they must absolutely be involved in the program. So what actually happens? An epiphany occurs at some point. And sometimes that happens after the before the diagnostic audit, and sometimes, and mainly, it happens due to the actually being involved in the diagnostic audit. But what people realize is if you're going to own a niche, it means that you have to focus on the end user, and design is the discipline to invest in. Difference is only valuable when it's relevant. And when product and brand work as conjoint twins, they realize that there's a lot of power in that. And what we have realized is that a lot of companies that go through this program reduce their product offering or the service offering and become much more focused. Often companies, when they're in difficulty, spread their offering. We've found they're able to reduce their offering and doing fewer things far better. So here, another statement. The program in Victoria is young, but here we're seeing somebody who runs an education furniture manufacturing, design and manufacturing company, shifting from not having a real plan to having a clear blueprint. They had a blur before that because they didn't exactly know where they were going. And now they're focused on design that is not just for the local market, but for the international market. So really what this statement here says is design culture embedded in business culture creates transformations that accelerate business growth and prosperity. The New Zealand and Victoria experiences demonstrate that design integration delivers cultural shifts, capability growth, and economic returns well worthy of the investment. Thank you.
And thank you all for sharing your experience and wisdom and how we can accelerate a program here in San Diego. I really think we have an opportunity to capitalize if we all work together. So Victor mentioned Dare to Dream. Wouldn't it be nice if San Diego was the world design capital in 2020? I'm in. Woo. Woo. Wouldn't it be nice if San Diego attracted more major venues, such as the Olympics, because we had the best total experience than any city in the U.S.? Wouldn't it be nice if San Diego was known as a leading life science cluster? Wouldn't it be nice if San Diego retained its smart and young talent with a vibrant city and region? And wouldn't it be nice if San Diego is a model city for innovation globally? As I hope you all do, I see such an opportunity for us here in San Diego. There are a lot of cities leading in innovation, but not really, as Victor mentioned, designing innovation purposefully and with commitment and consistently. This could be a real differentiator from our city. So I challenge us, let's use design as a catalyst to differentiate and capitalize on our DNA of San Diego, the DNA that we connect and we collaborate, and let's realize this vision for San Diego together. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.